You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday the 19th of August 2020 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. We've got a couple of updates on some previous news stories to begin with today before we get into the main content. Later on today, we've got an inside scoop on the Belarus protests, courtesy of Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson, and that will be on the stream directly after Patriotic Weekly Review, so I will refrain from commenting on that until I've heard his update on it. I was looking at a report yesterday, another copy of the Hope Not Hate press release, basically attacking Patriotic Alternative. And the version that they had in RT in Russia Today, it was actually written by a banker, if you can believe that. And of course, it had lots of extravagant lies in there, such as it's the far right that go out trying to cause violence, and it's the far left that refrain from it, the peace-loving far left. It has to be the most disingenuous one of the lot. And unfortunately, it's on RT. RT does sometimes have some right-wing content on there, as well as the left-wing content. I guess it is probably the most balanced out of all the mainstream stations, but it still veers very heavily towards the left. Also, an update on the fundraiser for Justice for Cannon, the five-year-old that was shot in the head while he rode his bicycle over his next-door neighbour's yard. And there's been a lot of fake news that's been put out about that, trying to pretend that his father was doing drugs with the assassin that killed him, which has been shown to be fake news. It was a fake police report, obviously trying to smear the parents. I believe the parents themselves were born-again Christians, and they had invited the killer around for a dinner just a couple of days previously because they wanted to be nice to their neighbours. Unfortunately, for whatever reasons, their neighbour, who happens to be black, killed the five-year-old, and the mother felt the reason to say, "My five-year-old's not a racist. My five-year-old doesn't have a racist bone in his body," or words to that effect, which kind of says that race played into it somehow. And there was a troll account that was put up asking for support for the guy that actually killed Little Cannon. And of course, you can't imagine that anybody would ever show support for something like that. And unbelievably, thousands of people have signed up to support him. I mean, absolutely horrific how anybody could support the killing of a five-year-old child. I put an image up there on the weekend radio schedule to draw attention to it, and the fund for his parents so that they can get good lawyers and try and find some peace after such an horrific thing happening to them. I would advise people to donate to them if they can. I'm just trying to think if there was any other news stories that I wanted to bring up before getting into this. Nope, that's it, I think. Well, the main one today that I really want to get into is actually the George Floyd killing, because now we've actually been able to see the camera footage we can see what really went on. We can see that this was not a racist killing. This was not an intentional killing. And that's quite clear from viewing the officer's video. So why wasn't the officer's video made public? Why did they prevent that from being made public? And why did the journalists lie about it? Because it was possible that you could go in and have a viewing and actually see what the video showed in private. So these journalists must have seen that, and they must have still lied about it and presented it as a racist killing because they wanted to stir up all this unrest. I mean, that's the only way that you can look at it. Why would journalists be deceitful about something like that, knowing that you're going to get a group like Black Lives Matter encouraging riots and looting in response to it? Well, the full video is now available, the full half-hour video, and it's been put together between a couple of both the cameras together have been put together. So where there's a bit where you can't really see what's going on, it's got the other camera there. It's available on the Daily Mail website. And it's available there with an article which is talking about one of the accused and his defense. It's quite an interesting defense. An attorney for one of the Minneapolis police officers charged in George Floyd's killing claims the black man contributed to his own death because he overdosed on fentanyl during his arrest. And when you watch the video, you can see that this is really clear. The man is out of his head. He's completely out of his mind. He's asking whether he can lie on the ground. He's delirious. He's refusing to do as he's told. He's refusing to put his arms up. He's refusing to get out of the car. He's refusing to get into the car. He's not making a lot of sense. He's babbling about his mother. And it is quite clear that he is on some kind of substance and he's not really taking in his surroundings. It's very sad that he ended up dying. But when we look at the toxicology results and we discover that he had this massive amount of fentanyl in his system, far more than the maximum amount that's known that somebody has survived, it becomes quite clear that that was the reason for all of this. That was the reason why he was saying he couldn't breathe, because fentanyl, an overdose of fentanyl, shuts down the receptors in the lungs. So he could very well have still been conscious, but he would have been trying to breathe in, but the oxygen just wouldn't have got into his blood, which accounts for the fact that he was still able to speak and say, I can't breathe. And yet the oxygen obviously wasn't getting into his system. Thomas Lane, 37, is one of the three officers charged with aiding and abetting murder for holding down Floyd's legs during his May the 25th fatal arrest. And how they can say that this is murder when it's quite clear that they are going by the book. They're doing exactly what they should have done. They tried to get him into the car. He refused to get into the car. He said, can I lie down on the ground? So they let him lie down on the ground. Obviously, while he was on the ground, they need to restrain him. So there was one officer that was on his legs and the other officer just had his knee over the side of his neck so that he couldn't try to get up and run away, basically. You do have to restrain somebody once they're arrested, especially if they are resisting arrest. And George Floyd, as we've seen, he towered over these police officers that were much smaller than him. Another officer, Derek Chauvin, is charged with murder after body cams showing him kneeling on Floyd's neck for nearly 9 minutes as he pleaded, I can't breathe. Now, he was saying, I can't breathe from way earlier at the beginning of the video. I mean, he may even have been saying it when he was still in the car, in his own car. He was definitely saying it when they were trying to get him into the police car. And he was just refusing to get in. He was just sitting on the edge and babbling and obviously quite delirious and saying, I can't breathe, when he had nobody holding his neck. And he was still saying, I can't breathe. Lane's attorney, Earl Grey, has been trying to get the charges against him dropped, claiming there is insufficient evidence to establish that the officer committed a crime. In a memorandum filed in court on Monday, The attorney claimed that Floyd swallowed a lethal dose of fentanyl as he was resisting arrest. The attorney pointed to body cam footage of the arrest, in which he claims Floyd had a white spot on the left side of his tongue when Lane and another officer first approached him following reports he had used a fake $20 bill to buy cigarettes at a convenience store. Now, it's really suspicious that he just waited there, and they appeared to just be sat there in the car waiting for the police to get there. Perhaps they were high, perhaps they weren't noticing what was going on around them. It is quite probable that if he was some kind of a drug dealer, and if he did have fentanyl on him and they saw that the police were coming, he may well have tried to swallow it. He may well have thought that he had it in some kind of a package that it would be able to pass through his body. Maybe he was hoping to sell it, or maybe that was his personal source of it. But they do. But a lot of the time, we see this with these drug dealers. They will swallow their stash, as it were, and it will explode within them, or they won't have packed it right, and they'll end up overdosing. So this explains why he was having this fentanyl overdose, is because he had deliberately swallowed this, probably thinking that he would be quite safe and it would just pass through his body. You can't really tell that's exactly what it is. I mean, they're just saying that he's got a white spot on the left side of his tongue. Obviously, it's going to be a very small white spot. Gray has claimed in the memo that Floyd intentionally ingested 2 milligrams of fentanyl, a lethal dose, after Lane ordered him to put his hands up to be taken into custody. I mean, there is also the possibility that he may have thought, well, the police are going to arrest me. I'm just going to take all my drugs now, and I'll probably be okay. I mean, that is another possibility of what happened here. All he had to do is sit in the police car, like every other defendant who is initially arrested. While attempting to avoid his arrest, all by himself, Mr. Floyd overdosed on fentanyl, the filing says. Given his intoxication level, breathing would have been difficult at best. Mr. Floyd's intentional failure to obey commands, coupled with his overdosing, contributed to his own death. And that's the statement from the officer. And that's exactly what it looks like happened. And this is why, when Chauvin was kneeling on him, trying to restrain him, this is why he looked completely unbothered by the crowd that were building around them. They had their cameras on. They were certain that they were doing exactly what they were supposed to be doing. Once the crowd gets there, they start shouting, "Get off him, he can't breathe, get off him." But of course, they weren't there at the start. They didn't see that he was saying he can't breathe before they were trying to restrain him. So you get the crowd thinking that one thing is going on, and the police are secure in the knowledge that that is not what is going on, and they've been there since the start of this. They've got this on their cameras. They're certain that they are going to be absolved. I mean, what you could say is that when he stopped moving and he had gone silent, they should have checked his pulse. But what else are they supposed to do? They're restraining the guy, and they're just waiting for an ambulance to get there. They're waiting for medical to get there. That's noted on the records that's what they were trying to do. There is so much public pressure on this case to try and find these police officers guilty of murder. They're certainly not guilty of murder. The worst that you could have it is that they may have contributed to his death. But what else were they supposed to do? They were following their procedures. If you've got somebody that's broken the law, you're trying to arrest them, then you have to restrain them. But given the public pressure on this, it will be interesting to see what the outcome of this is, because they are obviously innocent. Now, James Fields, who panicked when he was surrounded by violent Antifa at Charlottesville and drove his car forwards and hit Heather Heyer. Now, he was given hundreds of years prison sentence, and that was all due to the public pressure saying that he was guilty. In these cases, though, where we've had lots of public pressure such as the Darren Wilson case, Officer Darren Wilson, the Michael Brown case, and others. I can't recall the names of them all. Trayvon Martin, and that wasn't actually a police officer, that was a neighborhood watch officer. But in all these cases where Black Lives Matter have held up their saint, their marcher, in all these cases, the marcher has been a hardened criminal and the white police officer has been found to be innocent. And yet every time, it's been the journalists, it's been the mainstream media that have hyped all of this up. And yet it's been very clear from the officer's report and from the body cameras that the officers have been innocent. And yet the journalists have still stirred this up. It's the journalists that are responsible for the chaos that is going on in America thanks to this. And nothing is ever done to censure them for this. None of them are ever held to account for this. We're told that we are somehow inciting violence when we criticize a certain group, or even when we criticize individuals from certain groups, we are told that we are somehow inciting violence. And yet you have the mainstream media that tell lies about events, knowing that the result of that is going to be extreme violence that's going to cost the country millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, I should imagine, that it's cost the country, these riots and looting, let alone all the people that have been killed from it, all the violence that has gone on since then. And yet we never see these journalists accused of incitement to violence. And that's exactly what they've done here by portraying this as a racist killing when it quite obviously wasn't. They've been inciting the black community in America and around the world to engage in violence. And the really twisted thing about this is it's not just the mainstream media. It's the prosecutor that decided, for reasons we do not know, that he was not going to allow this video to be seen by the public. But the journalists did see it. So they have deliberately misrepresented this event with the aim of causing chaos. Now, of course, when we get accused of inciting violence or inciting hatred, we are doing our best to tell the truth. We are pointing out the facts as we see them. We're not deliberately distorting them. And what you've got here is you've got journalists deliberately distorting this because they were allowed to see the video. You could see the video in a private viewing. It's just that it wasn't available to the public. It's only available to the public now because the Daily Mail showed parts of it a couple of weeks back, and because parts of it had come out, the pressure was so much that they've allowed the full video to come out. And I do recommend people watch it because there is no way on earth you could look at that and think, oh, that's a racist killing, or, oh, those officers deliberately killed this innocent black man. And I think it's going to be hard for black people to see that and to say and to continue trying to say that this was a racist killing. But the problem is that they've got so much wrapped up in this now. They will continue to prosecute it. They'll continue to riot about it. The same as they did with Trayvon Martin, the same as they did with Michael Brown. I mean, even when the cases have been heard and the police officers have been found innocent and we'd heard all the evidence, they still to this day hold these black criminals up as being innocent marchers that were killed by racist police. The final bit of this report here, it says a medical examiner's report and a separate independent autopsy both ruled that Floyd's death was a homicide and that he died from asphyxiation. Now, there was a second autopsy that was done that was paid for by the family, and you could say, well, that could be biased. They could be wanting to give the results that the family particularly wanted, because the autopsy before them found that he had this very high amount of methamphetamine and fentanyl in his system, and asphyxiation is dying of lack of oxygen, but that is not saying that he died from strangulation, which is what most people think happened. Most people think that he died of strangulation. He died of asphyxiation. He died of lack of oxygen, which was caused by this overdose from the fentanyl. And now it looks like, from this officer's report here, that we can isolate the moment when he actually took that overdose, and it's on film as well. So we will have to wait and see whether we get an apology from the journalists for misleading everyone like that. And continuing with the Black Lives Matter subject here, we'll move over to Britain. At a Black Lives Matter protest in Parliament Square in London on Sunday, radical activists proclaimed that they are not loyal to Britain because of the alleged institutional racism they see as inherent in the United Kingdom's capitalist system. How can they say this when all we see on the news is people berating us about being racist? We see our sportsmen and women kneeling down before Black Lives Matter when they should be standing for the national anthem. When we see calls for black people to replace white people on television, we see the Labour Party saying that they're going to have all ethnic minority shortlists for MPs so that they can fill as many positions up with non-whites. When we see Boris Johnson proudly talking about how his cabinet is the most diverse in all of history with the most non-white people in it, how can they say that Britain is racist when we have a non-white Home Secretary, for a start, when we have a non-white Chancellor of the Exchequer, when we have laws to prevent racism, basically. We have all these laws to prevent discrimination. We have laws to prevent freedom of expression, freedom of association. All those things have been done away with because they're allegedly racist, and yet that is not good enough. And it doesn't matter what you do. It will never be enough for these other races. We can see that in Sweden. Sweden, the most progressive country in the world, the most anti-racist country in the world, and it still has Black Lives Matter riots, and it still has people going on about institutional racism and attacking the Swedes. This is never ending once this starts. Once you encourage this, because this is the twisted thing, we've got our own white people that are encouraging this. We're actually doing this to ourselves. In a Breitbart London exclusive video, a speaker at a Black Lives Matter protest said, "Britain is a racist country, and if you disagree with that, then you are not an anti-racist." At multiple points during his speech, the activist, who wore a T-shirt honouring the mass-murdering Cuban communist revolutionary Che Guevara, asked the crowd of demonstrators, "Are you loyal to Britain?" The BLM protesters screamed back, "No," in response. So they're all traitors, basically. They're all affirming the fact that they're traitors, they're not loyal to Britain, and yet this is going on our streets. This is allowed because it's non-whites that are doing this, and yet they claim that we are the ones who are being racist. Is that not being racist to the British people? Is that not treason to the country? We do have a law against treason, although Tony Blair did away with the death penalty for treason sneakily when he was in power. We do still have this offence of treason, and yet no mainstream news about this. No mainstream news about Black Lives Matter saying they're not loyal to Britain. He responds, "Good, I hope not, because the backbone of our country, what made it an imperialist country, was the blood of black people. That's how Britain was built," he explained. So it's his country now. He sees Britain as his country, and he's not going to be loyal to it, and he's going to encourage as many people as possible not to be loyal to it. I mean, doesn't that kind of say that it's not actually his country if he doesn't want to be loyal to it? He says, "We only have contempt for the state, contempt for the police, and contempt for the ideology that formed Britain. Since they won't move for the end of racism, we will make them move," he declared, being quite open about this. He has contempt for the country. And instead of saying to them, well, if you have contempt for the country, you've got the whole continent of Africa that you can go back to, we bend over backwards for them and we try to appease them and we go along with what they say and we remove our statues and we remove our people from important public positions. And this is the response that we get. We just get their contempt for doing that. The radical leftist went on to blame the capitalist system for the racism that is supposedly embedded in the British system, saying capitalism is what's in the minds of the politicians who say there is no institutional racism. Well, the British system is supposed to be a meritocracy. And yet, with all these diversity quotas and with all these laws against incitement to hatred, we've actually done away with the meritocracy. We've done away with the meritocracy. We've done away with people being responsible for their own actions. And we've done away with the principle of free speech that is essential for democracies to function. We've actually doing away with all that was good about the British system, all that we wanted to export to the rest of the world in the name of fighting against racism. And in response, we're accused of being institutionally racist. If we were institutionally racist, we wouldn't have anyone non-white working in our institutions. And again, he's going on at capitalism here, which shows you the communist leanings of Black Lives Matter. Of course, nationalism is neither capitalist nor communist. Nationalist puts the nation first, not the individual. Even in the Labour Party, they say they stand for the working class and minorities. But Keir Starmer was responsible for putting many black people in prison during the London riots, the Speaker said. The Labour Party standing for the working class? I think the working class might have something to say about that. I don't think the Labour Party have done anything for the working class. They hate the working class, particularly the white working class. And what should Keir Starmer have done with the rioters then? He should have just let them go. And don't forget, there were books in the 60s talking about the law that we go by, as in justice and law and the courts that we have. That's the white man's law. That's not the black man's law. And they were writing about this in the 60s. The revolutionaries were writing about it and saying that it's completely alien to them. They don't see why they should be punished for attacking somebody or stealing from somebody, because it's only that particular person that they have harmed. They don't understand the harm that's done to society by individual crimes, if you believe what was said in the 60s. I think that's the way that they see things. I think that is what we see when we look at the history of Africa, and we see that they didn't develop a system of law and order. They didn't develop a system of justice, and they don't understand why we have our system of justice today. And again, to go back to the first topic that I was talking about, this explains why, even when the courts find that Officer Darren Wilson was innocent of the crimes, they will still be shouting that he was guilty and that the black guy was innocent, because they don't understand our system of justice. I think that's quite clear here, where he says Keir Starmer is responsible for putting many black people in prison during the London riots. He clearly thinks that those criminals should not have been put in prison simply because they're black. That's what they're calling for here. They are saying black people should not be prosecuted when they commit crimes. To prosecute black people when they commit crimes is racist. And they will say that it's racist because black people are prosecuted for crimes at a higher rate than white people are. Obviously, that's because they commit crime at a higher rate. We have more men in prison than women because men commit crime at a higher rate. We don't say that the system is anti-men and we can't possibly have 98% men in prison and only 2% women, because that's unequal. We don't say that because we haven't been conditioned to see society as anti-men, but we've been conditioned to see society as racist, and we've been conditioned to think that everybody is the same, when quite clearly we're not. And because of that, he doesn't understand this, and he thinks that black people should not be put in prison for rioting, clearly. In a previous Breitbart London exclusive video, a leader of the Oxford chapter of Black Lives Matter UK, Sasha Johnson, pronounced that the police in the UK are no different than the KKK. Johnson went on to call for the establishment of a black militia to combat racism. Is that not incitement of violence there, calling for a black militia to be established? What do they mean by combat racism? According to them, you can't commit racism if you're black. You can only commit racism if you're white. So he's calling for a black militia to combat white people. And we have black militias openly on the streets of London. We have a black militia marching just a couple of weeks back in a uniform, in a political uniform, in direct contravention of British laws that saw Oswald Mosley jailed during the war, British laws that saw Jada Fanson and Paul Golding prosecuted for this. And yet, if you're black, you can go out in your black militia, in your political uniforms, nothing will be done about it. And yet, we are accused of being racist. The only racism in the British country is directed against the indigenous British people. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion. Talk Radio for the nationalist community.